Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
There's no big energy coming out of the Democratic Party.
Shock, disgust, happiness, sweat, a little bit of lust, baby.
It's go time. It's go, no go, lock and load, love him and leave him, smoke him if you got him, see you when I see you, because it's time for Mark Reardon time.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Good afternoon and welcome into the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk. Once again, if you're like, who the heck is this guy that's on the air, because it doesn't sound like Mark Reardon, you would be correct. My name is Ethan Hannaford, producer for The Annie Fry Show and The Mark Reardon Show. And while Mark is taking some time off and enjoying these kind of in-between Christmas, New Year's days with his family, Sue and I are still here at the 97.1 studio. Well, Sue is working. Sue is at home right now. So I imagine it probably even feels weirder for you because you got like the rustle and bustle of just stuff going around you at home. But you're also working. You're kind of in between. How are you doing today, Sue?
Pretty good. Thank you. I'd like to see the sun, but in the meantime, what can you do?
You know, I'm not very optimistic that we're going to get it. This is the time of year where it kind of just feels like you're like, is the sun ever going to come back out?
Yep.
And I'm kind of wondering if it is going to ever. So we'll just have to wait and see on that one. Yesterday, we had some great best of segments as we go through some of the best segments that we have seen in the 2024 year. Including interviews that Mark had with Garrett Price on his Yacht Rock documentary, Frank Cusimano on remembering the late, great Whitey Herzog, Bob Gale talking about just how Back to the Future got started, the process that it took. I didn't know that they were rejected by Disney and all kinds of other big companies. Yeah. Susan Lin and the constant, I would say, drive to try and ban smartphones from elementary schools. John Seiler on Kansas University, building a new center that is meant to oppose anti-trans laws. James Knowles, the former mayor of Ferguson, Missouri. So there were plenty of great segments in yesterday's show, and we have plenty more for you today, including, well, we got a treat for you here in this 3 o'clock hour. Bud Hedeke was a gunnery sergeant in the Army Air Force in World War II. And last January, he came on and he talked about this new mini-series that's going on called Masters of the Air, which is meant to portray kind of what went on during that time, specifically for the Air Force. And he shared some recollections from World War II and from his point of view, some phenomenal stuff. And then, unfortunately, just a few months after he joined us, he passed away at the age of 98. So Mark, a few weeks following his death, had his son David on to just remember his father and share some really cool stories. Those two interviews are going to play back-to-back here, the first one with Bud in just a couple of minutes, and in the next segment we'll have it with David. So really looking forward to hearing those. Following that, listen, it just doesn't feel like it's a best of if Kenny Wallace is not involved in some way. And Kenny shared a hilarious story back in April of someone, just a random stranger, just walking into his house and nice. Kenny, being Kenny, inviting him on his couch and them having one heck of a conversation. So Kenny takes Mark through that. The 4 o'clock hour, Sue's News is going to be live today. Paul Hall will still join, as well as Frank Cusimano. So don't worry, all you out there. We still have our normal Friday guests on. And then Matt Pauly will be talking some Cardinals baseball in the at 5:07. And that'll be followed by a couple more best ofs to wrap up your Friday. Sue, you ready to get into this first one here?
Oh, yeah. This is so great.
All right. Bud Hedeke, Gunnery Sergeant Toglier in the Army Air Force in World War II, speaking with Mark about some of his recollections about World War II.
We talked about Masters of the Air.
Something big is brewing.
The 8th will be sending up the largest air armada ever assembled in the history of mankind.
Straight into Hitler's territory.
And in complete and total air superiority. That's the mission.
Well, it's interesting because the New York Times did a piece about this, and I guess, and I've told people that I rewatched Band of Brothers about 4 months ago, and I've seen it twice before, but it's just, it's must viewing, I think. And the New York Times piece said, after Spielberg and Tom Hanks, the same people who are doing Masters of the Air, the producing team here, some of the same folks, after they put that on the air, I guess Spielberg's father, Arnold, who was a veteran in World War II, said, you know what, pretty good series, but there needs to be more aerial action. Well, they did the Pacific, and that was focusing on some aerial action. But then Arnold Spielberg said, now, that was okay, but where is the Air Force? Well, now you have it in Masters of the Air. And we had an amazing conversation last year during our Fish Fry Fridays with Bud Hedeke, who's back with us this afternoon, who was a World War II fighter pilot and has some amazing stories that he's going to share once again with us here this afternoon. How are you, Bud? Welcome back to the show.
Good. How are you, sir?
Fantastic. It was interesting because I replayed, it was so darn good, I replayed our interview that we did from last March over Christmas. And I had just heard about, I had just seen the trailer for Masters of the Air. And then when I aired that interview, here you were talking about it. And I had forgotten that you referenced this series last year when you were with me, because you knew about this for a while, didn't you?
Yes, in fact, that was at the O'Fallon VFW last summer when we talked together. Now, I read the book on Masters of the Air a couple years ago. It's a big book, about 500 pages. I found it to be very interesting and informative. And I'm just chomping at the bit because I'm going to be looking at it when we're done with this interview this evening. I'm going to look at it with my family.
I know that you have been anticipating this. You talked about it with me last year. Now, did you have, I want to make sure, you're featured in a great documentary that you mentioned last year, too. It's called The Cold Blue, that's on Max, that I would highly recommend as well. And you're in that particular documentary with other pilots. But did you consult at all on this particular show or not?
No, not at that time. I really don't believe the directors were aware of the Masters of the Air when they did The Cold Blue.
So let's go back to that time and, you know, some of the things that you learn from that movie, from The Cold Blue, and, you know, just this story. You had more, the fatalities in the 8th Air Force, 26,000, more than 26,000. That was higher than the entire U.S. Marine Corps, Bud.
That's correct. Actually, it was a little closer, it doesn't matter, I guess, but closer to 28,000. And today at 99 nearly, I'm so blessed that God let me live. But I was amazed in the book how political things were even during a war, how some generals put more emphasis on airplanes than human lives, and others came in and, of course, put more emphasis on human lives than the airplanes.
What was your, I want to get back to that because that is interesting, but let me ask this. What was your specific role? You're a bombardier and a hail gunner, right?
No, I wasn't a tail gunner. I flew up in the plexiglass nose. A few highlights, if I may. I was shot down, or we were, on our very first mission to Ham,
right,
Germany.
Yeah.
And we didn't bail out. We thought we could make it to Allied territory. And we crashed in Belgium. And last March, I was so thankful to be invited back to Europe,
right,
to Germany and Belgium, where I crashed. And it was quite emotional. I flew 23 missions, and of them, we probably had holes in our plane half of the missions. So it was somewhat of a hazardous profession, if I might say.
So what was, when you were in the plane, explain the specific role that you had in the plane there, in the plexiglass.
My role was that of dropping the bombs,
okay.
And which I did. In fact, on 23 missions, I dropped a total of 423 bombs, weighing in excess of 216,000 pounds. Now, if you just for a moment take that one plane times thousands, you get a slight idea of how many tons and tons of bombs we dropped on Germany.
Now, what do you remember about being shot down? And how did those memories kind of flood back when you were in Belgium last year?
Well, some things you never forget. That's one of them. German 88-millimeter cannon flak, or shells. We called it flak. And Germany had them all over Germany. More Allied planes were shot down by flak than by German fighters.
Wow.
A lot of people don't know that. But they shot out our number one and two engine, and they were both on fire. And, of course, we had to put them out, which the pilot did, but a B-17 does not stay up on two engines. Now, we didn't go straight down, but we were losing altitude very fast. And like I said, made it across the Rhine River into Belgium and crashed on a small field, which actually turned out to be a American P-47 Thunderbolt field. But fighters don't need the runway that bombers do. So we used up that field pretty quick and went out into a field and nosed over. But thank God nobody was hurt.
And then were you rescued right away? What happened right after you landed then?
A guy came out, if I may. I remember his exact words and said, "Excuse me, but this is what he said. What are you doing here with that big-ass bird?"
Yeah.
And I said, "What are the German signs doing all over the field?" And he said, "We let them up for sentimental reasons." Crazy.
Oh, my goodness.
But we stayed there 4 days until an American C-47 transport plane came and picked us up, brought us back to England, and then we flew 22 more missions.
Bud Hedeke is with me. We're talking about the new show that's on Apple TV Plus that debuted today called Masters of the Air, the same producing team, Spielberg Hanks, that did Band of Brothers. He is a 98-year-old Air Force fighter pilot. Now, isn't it true that the British mainly flew their missions at night, but the Americans flew in broad daylight? Why was that?
You have it correct. I'm not too sure, but we didn't get the right roll of the cards on that one. No, the British RAF, Royal Air Force, with Lancaster bombers and Spitfires and what, they flew their missions during the night. I'm not saying they weren't dangerous, mm-hmm. but we were the ones that flew during the day. Unfortunately, on a clear day, you'll see it, I'm sure, in Masters of the Air, where the contrails of the B, you see it on commercial airliners,
sure.
show up, and the Germans could see us coming 50 miles out. So they were actually ready for us.
Well, so then it becomes a situation where a lot of these were suicide missions, right, essentially?
That they were what, sir?
They were suicide missions, essentially. I mean, you all knew, I'm sure, that you might not come back from those missions,
right? Suicide, not like the Japanese, where they dove their planes actually into battleships. But they were very dangerous. And at the beginning of the war, the powers to be said that if you made 6 to 10 missions, you were living on borrowed time. The odds got a little better when I flew, but it only took one Wright German 88-millimeter cannon shell. If it hit the plane in the bomb bay with the bombs, it blew up, and that happened many times.
Well, you know, and I remember in The Cold Blue and the other documentary that's on Max, I don't know if you said this, but other pilots said, look, you were very excited. You've been trained. You wanted to fly, but then you realize, you know, at a certain point that you can get shot down and you can get killed. So I don't know if it was more physically torturous or my guess would be just psychologically, mentally torturous. But you were 19 years old when some of this started, right?
I flew all my 23 missions at 19.
And the oldest person...
Now, the old man on
our
crew...
Yeah, the old man was how old? Not very old, right?
Say again.
The oldest guy was what, in your particular group, was what, 23?
The oldest man on my crew was 25.
Yeah. That's amazing, right?
Yeah, it was. But they wanted us young. You have more guts, I guess. But I'll tell you this. Anybody that tells you they weren't scared, they're a liar, because I was scared every time. One, I flew five missions in a row. That meant 5 days in a row. And by the time you got to the fourth one, you really didn't care. It was somewhat suicide. You're correct.
I think I might have asked you this last year, but was there a, you know, in Band of Brothers, there's an amazing scene at the end of the series where Easy Company finally realizes what's been happening at concentration camps, and they've been fighting. They know what the Germans are trying to do, take over Europe, and they're, you know, they're fighting in Bastogne and all these other locations. Then they realize what's happening, the horrors of the concentration camps. So when you're flying these missions, do you realize the backdrop of atrocities that are going on in the world or not?
No, we knew nothing about the Holocaust, but we did know about the prisoner of war camps. Mm-hmm. And as you just said, when I went to Europe in March, there were two infantry and two Air Force. There were four of us. And we did go to Bastogne, where in a pub, very famous, we gave our autograph over 300 times. And the people of Europe, it just blew my mind, didn't say thank you for your service. They said thank you for our freedom. And that was only, what, about 9 months ago. And it was very emotional. And then, of course, I went to St. Troyden, which was the town where we got shot down.
You know, after you and I spoke last year, and this is germane to what you just said, I went to Europe and I went to Spain. I spent a week with some listeners from 97.1 FM Talk, and it appeared to me as if the Europeans have more recognition of what the Americans did to save their butts in World War II than many, certainly younger Americans do, Bud.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I am so happy, thankful, I don't know what other words to use, that the people today, young and old, can actually see and hear what us kids went through 80 years ago by watching Masters of the Air. Yes, I haven't seen it yet, but all I've heard are good reviews.
I've heard that too. Now, Bud, I know how excited you are, and your daughter's been communicating with us, and I really appreciate you taking time to come on the air. But I would expect that this is going to be, you know, that trip to Belgium was very emotional. This is going to be emotional for you tonight, isn't it?
It sure will. And one request I make to all the people out there, if they would please say a thanks and a prayer to God, to thank him for those young men, 28,000 closely, 19 to 30, that gave their lives for our freedom. I mean, it's unbelievable. Their lives were shortened. They fought for our country. And I don't think too many people actually realize that.
I don't think
But I'm very proud to have played a small part in it.
Well, God bless you, Bud Hedeke, and God bless the USA. And I don't know if I can say enjoy Masters of the Air. I know it's going to be a special moment for you and your family tonight. And really, I'm curious about your reaction afterwards. So maybe we'll have you back. But, Bud, thank you so much, and I hope you're doing okay.
Thank you very much. Nice talking with you. Good night.
Take care. That's Bud Hedeke. And I didn't want to make light of this, but boy, he's almost 99 years old. He had a cancer diagnosis last year, and he just still sounds really sharp. Look, 77% of the 8th Air Force was killed, injured, or captured during World War II. 77%. 26,000 was the number I used. He says, and I believe Bud, because it probably is higher, 28,000. That was higher than the entire U.S. Marine Corps during all of World War II. Masters of the Air started today on Apple TV+. So as you know, let me kind of recap this story. We had an amazing opportunity more than a year ago, a little more than a year ago, maybe about a year ago, because Easter was different last year, but we were in our fish fry tour. We were in O'Fallon, and there was a World War II vet by the name of Bud Hedeke who came out and visited with us, and he shared some stories, and it was amazing. He was 97 years old, and we were thoroughly impressed with that interview. In fact, to the point where I played that interview at least one more time.
Yeah, he made a best of.
Yeah, it was a best of recording. And then we also, and when I listened to the interview back on the best of, I thought, you know what? He mentioned this show, Masters of the Air. And when Masters of the Air on Apple TV Plus came on, we had Bud back on the show in January. He was very excited because it wasn't necessarily about him, but it was about people that did things that he did in World War II. And as you remember, he was shot down in his first mission. So we had heard that he had passed away about 3 weeks ago. There were several people who had touched base with me, and we shared that information on the air. His son, David, reached out to me, left a message here at Odyssey St. Louis. Actually had a little trouble getting a hold of me, but I returned his call last night. And David's with us tonight because he started to tell me a story about his father and a young man from Montana that I thought was incredible, and I think people need to hear it. So David Hedeke is with us this evening. How are you, David? Thank you so much for doing this. We had a great chat last night.
Yeah, hey, Mark. It's great to be here, and I'm doing okay. Ready to share more stories about Bud.
Well, let's first talk about your dad and some of the biographical facts that I may have, you know, not centered in on, though. But he was 98 when he passed away recently, right?
That's correct.
But I think he told me he was only 19 years old when he was in World War II.
Yes, he was in from 1943 to 1945. But when he flew his missions, his 23 missions, he was 19 years old, which is crazy to think about.
What do you remember, like when you were little, was it something that you were aware of that your father was in World War II? Was it stories that he shared, or was it something, because I know with Vietnam vets in particular, they don't really like to talk much about their war experiences for obvious reasons. Was it different with your father?
No, it was almost exactly like that. My brother, I'm the youngest of six kids. My brother is the oldest, and he was a Vietnam vet. And I always knew my dad was a World War II vet, but that's really all I knew. I was plugging away in the basement one day. I was digging through boxes, and I see this green canvas bag. And for, you know, a kid 11, 12 years old, I got so excited. I unzipped it, and I'm seeing strike photos. I found a piece of flak. I'm seeing bullet casings. I'm seeing a Mae West, all of his gear. I got so excited. I took all this out, and then I thought, oh, no, he's going to kill me if he finds out about this. So when he finally got home from work, I told him what I found, and I said, Dad, these pictures, they're amazing. These should go in an album somewhere. And he agreed. He went through that stuff with me, Mark. He showed it to me, talked about it with me, and that was the beginning of his eventual involvement in bomb groups, Planes of Fame in Minnesota, time in Florida at air shows, and then, of course, his involvement in the 452nd bomb group, which is where he flew, and the group he flew with in World War II. And so he was a two-time president of that bomb group. And it was just, It was amazing. He just took off with it after that, and he started talking about it all the time.
And he talked about it in a documentary that I have watched, and you can watch it on Max, and it's called The Cold Blue, and it's a tribute to the men of the 8th Air Force who flew these missions, and your father is featured prominently in that. And that's part of the story that you started to share with me the other night. I think I said we spoke last night. It was actually Wednesday night. But I want you to share this story about this this kid and the mom that tracked down your father because of The Cold Blue, right?
Yes. Great. What a great story. Not only this boy in Montana, but there was a doctor in Utah who became fast friends with Dad. He saw The Cold Blue, reached out to Dad. They have become friends, and Dad was subsequently honored at a big festival in Utah as a result of that. He, you know, there were people that have reached out to him across the globe, no joke, as a result of The Cold Blue. But back to this boy, as you know, you recall, Mark and I were talking about youth today and their awareness or lack of awareness of things in the past,
right,
like World War II. And so this boy saw The Cold Blue. He immediately tried to reach out to Dad, finally contacted him and told him, "You are one of the saviors of the world."
This kid was 16 years old, right?
Holy cow.
And by the way, he was right about that.
Yeah.
He didn't misinterpret that, did he?
No, isn't that wild? I mean, saviors of the world. Even Dad was taken aback at that. And so he told Dad he was just really into World War II. He had incredible knowledge of it. He told him about his favorite fighter plane. He goes, "Yeah, P-51s were great. They got all the fame, but I'd be a P-47 pilot." And
wow.
I'm not kidding you. He just knew so much. And he then made a YouTube video, and Dad didn't have a computer or access to it. So my sister and I got it on our phones and showed him. But this YouTube video he made as a tribute to Dad, because they talked on the phone a number of times, and he said, "I've seen your picture. I've watched videos of you. I've seen The Cold Blue, but now I want you to get to know me." And so he made this video, and it was so sweet and sincere. And he just continued to praise Dad for who he was. And so, of course, Dad, being gracious, he made a copy of his logbook. He made copies of all kinds of things, pictures, sent them to this young man in Montana. Now this young man in Montana is calling Dad all the time, knows that he's in declining health, and he's concerned, and he really wanted to meet him. So then I get a text from his mother about coming here, and she said, "You know, I want to make my son's dreams come true." And there were three other veterans in the area that he had reached out to. She actually started a GoFundMe page to raise the money, because they're a lower income family, to fly her son out here and spend a week seeing these veterans. And he made two visits to my dad, knowing he was dying. He wanted to shake the hand of one of the saviors of the world.
I just love that story.
Wow.
And I didn't hear the whole story because I stopped you when you started telling me, and I just think it's fantastic. And yeah, what you know, David said is true. What I was talking about, and I was even referencing my own children who are in their 20s right now, because it bothers me, and I'm not accusing my kids of this. I'd like to have this conversation, but what I said to you the other night is I'd like to get my kids in a room. Maybe I should do this. Play them that interview or those interviews with your father, or watch The Cold Blue, to have an appreciation for what these kids, they were kids,
19.
Went through. Your dad told me, and I said this to you the other night, the oldest person in his unit was 25, the oldest.
Yeah, it's amazing. And if you watched Masters of the Air, now I've read that book twice, every anecdotal story that appeared in that series was true. I'm not joking about that, because I cross-referenced it the second time I read it with the show, because I wanted to see, okay, I don't remember, it's a 500-page book. So I started cross-referencing, and I'm going, oh my gosh, these scenes of what's happening, it's all real. Everything was real. And it brought so much to life for me. You know, I've heard stories my whole life.
Yeah.
I'm a grandfather now. I got a 4.5-year-old grandson. So I have heard things my whole life, but seeing that really brought it to life in a new way for me.
Well, one of the things you also told me, and this, I think, speaks to the popularity of your father, but when Bud passed away, David asked me, well, how did you find out? We had several people that shared the information with us. You said that actually became a bit of an issue because there were people that were being notified by the VFW before family members, right?
Yes. Mark, it was wild. So we're trying, you know, and we're dealing with our own grief. Granted, Dad lived a full life. I mean, how many people get to live to be almost 99? But we still dearly loved him and we miss him. So we were dealing with our own grief, trying to notify all of the extended family first, then friends and acquaintances and business acquaintances, on and on. Well, we're seeing stuff up on Instagram and we're going, whoa, and we're trying to reach out to people. Take that down. We haven't notified family yet. And the response we got was, it's all over the internet.
Right. Yeah. He made an impression. I mean, he made an impression on us. You know, I met him that one time and I remember that interview. Fred and Sue and I talked about it the whole year, and that's why we wanted to have him back as well in January. So we didn't know him very well, but he meant a lot to us as well, David.
David, you know, one of the things that struck us about him was his positivity. You know, he had been through all of that and more. And he was just such a positive individual. Do you think that was part of his longevity?
Definitely. I mean, Sue, he would talk all the time. Like, let's say if something was getting somebody down in the family, he would always come back with, hey, I'm a glass half full kind of guy, not a glass half empty. You got to change your perspective. And he really did. You know, the things that were difficult in life, we should really process those, but he suppressed a lot of that because he focused on the positive. I mean, you nailed it, Sue. That's exactly what his personality was. And everyone who met him, and I'm meeting people now that I didn't even have a clue he had contact with, that everyone loved him. Just loved him. He was charismatic. He was dynamic. He was demanding and punctual, but he was just fun-loving as well.
Remember, Sue, he sang a song to us last year, too. I kind of had forgotten about the song.
A song is I'll Be Seeing You.
Yeah.
And famous song back from the day, right, back from that era. And what he did was he rewrote the lyrics for his fellow airmen, and the ones that it was kind of a play on words, I'll be seeing you, to the 26,000 plus airmen that died and never got to become fathers, grandfathers, husbands, whatever. And so, yeah, and that's the song he sang all the time. Now I got to tell you this, just because it's crazy special, he rewrote the lyrics again, and only a couple of us knew about it. And he wants me to sing it at his funeral.
Oh, my goodness.
So you have not had the funeral yet?
Nope. It is May 3rd. Yep, May 3rd.
Well, keep me posted on that, David, if you would. And that's fantastic. I appreciate you coming on here. Our love to your family. Thank you so much for connecting with me the other day. And then keep me posted because I agree with that young man from Montana. He's one of the saviors of the planet.
Yep.
So thank you, David Hedeke. And thanks to your father, Bud. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you, Mark, and thank you, Sue. It's been a pleasure.
Woke up this morning, Sue, to a pretty crazy story. You know, I watch Kenny Wallace's videos on X, formerly Twitter, all the time because they're immensely entertaining.
Yes,
we feature him
are.
On this show. This was a bit of a crazy story here.
Strange man looks me up, and I had the door open because the dogs were peeing. So I and I don't even know this man. Tell me about yourself.
Charlie Roeder from Livermore, Iowa. I used to live here in the St. Louis area.
And what made you how did you go about finding me? Where'd you get my address?
Online. It's pretty easy to find you.
Hold on. I want to hear this. Go ahead. Say it again.
It was just online. I just looked up your name and there it was, so I put it in my phone.
Yeah, Sue, now there's a line of people that it's about a mile long waiting to get into Kenny Wallace's house right now. It goes back all the way to Arnold and Richardson Road, Kenny's just going to open up the doors. Are you crazy? Well, that's a rhetorical question.
Yeah, that is.
I'm telling you guys, I was shocked, bewildered, because, you know, I've heard stories before. Now I got everybody to, you know, lock your gate, you know, get a gun. And I'm like, my God, calm down. But I'm still speechless. And there's a lot of things to say. And listen, the guy was very nice. But ballsy is all get out.
Yes.
I know. Well, you know, at first, I think I had missed the part about how, you know, the dogs were peeing. It makes a little bit more sense that the door was open, but still.
Wait.
Who does that?
He didn't knock, Kenny?
He just walked in, right, Kenny?
He just walked in?
No. Well, I'll explain it to you.
Okay.
Perfectly. Okay, so I just opened the door. It's 86 degrees outside. No drama. I have two little chihuahuas. They're super nice. I opened the door. I let them out. And they're out there for a while, and I go and sit down on my couch. And usually they come in, and then I close the door. But while the door's open, I look, and this man comes walking right up to my door and starts to puts his foot into my door. And I said, excuse me, do I know you? He goes, no, I don't know. You don't know me. I said, well, can I help you? I told my son that I was going to find out where Kenny Wallace lived. I said, well, you're already this far. So I was just kind of joking with him. I said, come on, sit on my couch, talk to me. He came in, sat right down on my couch, and I thought to myself, this is so crazy. Nobody will believe it. So like everybody in life, you know, I do the right thing, and I grab my cell phone.
Right. And you just started talking to him. And he said he had some St. Louis connections, but was he just here to come see you, or was just like, hey, I got a little extra time, I'm going to go to Kenny Wallace's house?
I think it was both. He's from Iowa. He comes to see his son here in Afton. But and then it gets better. I said, well, come on, let me take you up to the shop and show you my race car, all my trophies.
Aww.
And we start walking up there, and I get my keys out. And he goes, oh, no, it's open. I already walked in there.
Oh, no. No.
Oh, no.
No.
Okay, but so there is a part of me that's like, I know this turned out well and you're still alive, and I'm very happy that you are. But, I mean, didn't you get a little nervous?
I was nervous, yes, absolutely. Just because, you know, there are the people that are off the charts, right? They see you, they hear you on radio, they see you on whatever now, and they're like, oh, he's not real. No way to be real. But he says, listen, I love you on YouTube. My name's Indiana Charlie. And I'm like, okay. So, but when we went up to the garage, he found my address. He rolled up the hill here, and he went to the shop right away. And I guess he just let himself in. He walked right in. No, and when he told me, no, it's already open, I've already been in. And that's when I started going, oh, my God.
Mm-mm.
So, but listen, you guys got questions. So do I. But, you know, it's like, listen, you drive around in your car. There's your license plates. So these websites, everybody's finding your address.
Yeah.
I assume when somebody tells me they can find my address, Sue, I guess I could find your address, too.
I know, and that's not good. There's nothing about that that's good. Kenny, I have another question. What did your wife say? Was she not there?
Oh, this is interesting, too, because Kim had a story right before your story, right, Kenny?
What did Kim say?
So I'm doing the right thing. I'm keeping the cell phone rolling. And then so Kim comes walking through the door. And now the guy's gone. And I said, Kim, you won't believe this story. And she goes, oh, you won't believe mine. Kim says, I'm at Schnucks, and I'm looking through body wash. I want to get some different body wash. I'm looking at it. This crazy man walks up to me and starts talking to me about, I have somebody in an old folks home, and here's the body wash you need. And Kim says, I just acknowledged him and put my head back down. And then the guy got really mad at her and breathes real hard, and you're rude, and he walked off. So Kim's in another aisle, and he comes over to that aisle. And so both Kim and I, my wife and myself, had the most crazy experience in life. I just feel like there's a bumper zone around everybody, right?
But wasn't Kim trying to downplay your deal, say, he's just a fan. He's just a fan,
oh, yeah.
Kenny.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, that would not be my reaction if it was my house.
She did.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Good for her, though. That's good to roll.
Yeah, she really did. It was amazing. She said, oh, he's just, you know, I didn't really realize it because I was so caught up in the moment that when I went back and looked at the videos, Mark, you're right. She said that.
She just dismissed it. Ah, no big deal.
Oh, my gosh.
That's why at the end of that video, I roll my eyes. I'm like, oh, my wife's crazy.
Yes. Well, now, the one thing, I'll close on this, is I really did think this, and here you are on my show as well, but don't you worry that this opens up a can of worms here a little bit?
Maybe I shouldn't have put it on.
Well, I mean,
you know, but
I'd get up tomorrow morning and see if there really is a line outside your door. There might be.
Beware. I have cameras. I have my cell phone. I'm ready.
Oh, my gosh.
I just thought it was a funny story. It was really cool.
Did he have a particular question, or was he just curious as to what you were like?
He was the nicest man. He just, you know, listen, there's baseball fans. I mean, when I was with Adam Wainwright, you know, being inducted into the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame, I was frozen because I'm like, oh, my God. I'm right next to Adam Wainwright, and I was right there for like 3 hours. And this guy, he's been a big fan of mine racing in NASCAR my whole career. And I was, you know, 15 years on Fox. You know, I'm all over national TV.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You're a big shot.
He was enamored. Hey, listen, when I'm around Mark Reardon and Sue's News, I get nervous.
It's funny. I was telling somebody the story. You know, people ask me every once in a while, how do you know Kenny? And I share one story with him because we knew each other just a little bit, and I think maybe I had even met you. And then one time I'm at a Cardinals game. I think I was with John Lamping, Sue,
okay.
And I had really good seats. And I'm walking back, and Kenny's behind home plate, and he's in the middle, and like not right at the aisle. And there weren't a lot of people at the game. And he stands up. He goes, "Mark Reardon," and then he points at himself. He goes, "Kenny Wallace." I didn't know who he was. Of course I knew who he was, but that was hilarious when he did
that's
that.
That's adorable.
Get more at 971talk.com.